Here, over an acre of ground, lay dead and dying people. You could not see which was which, reported the famous BBC broadcaster Richard Dimbleby on the 15th of April 1945 from the infamous concentration camp of Bergen-Belsen in Germany. Elements of the British 11th Armoured Division had entered the camp to sights none of the young soldiers would ever forget. Quote, "The living lay with their heads against the corpses, and around them moved the awful ghostly procession of emaciated, aimless people, with nothing to do and with no hope of life, unable to move out of your way, unable to look at the terrible sights around them," continued Dimbleby. Babies had been born here, tiny wizened things that could not move. A mother, driven mad, screamed at a British sentry to give her milk for her child, and thrust the tiny mite into his arms, then ran off, crying terribly. He opened the bundle and found the baby had been dead for days. "This day at Belsen was the most horrible of my life." Unquote. Bergen-Belsen was not an extermination camp, but rather by war's end it had become a huge collection centre for tens of thousands of emaciated and diseased prisoners who had been forced from concentration camps further to the east to prevent their liberation by the rapidly advancing Red Army. Established as a forced labour camp in the late 1930s, Belsen's status had changed dramatically with the arrival of a new commandant in December 1944, when SS Hauptsturmführer Josef Kramer was appointed direct from Auschwitz. Although there were no gas chambers at Belsen, there were crematoria, and enough starvation and brutality to make sure that it was well fed with the stricken bodies of the victims. Belsen held Jews, Gypsies, Czechs, Poles, anti-Nazi Christians, and homosexuals. When Kramer took over the camp, its population stood at 15,257, in a camp that had been designed to hold just 10,000 people. By the 1st of March 1945, the number of prisoners had swollen to over 40,000, and by the 15th of April 1945, the day of its liberation, Belsen was crammed with over 60,000. Typhus had broken out, and the SS had largely fled, leaving the prisoners to their own devices. Kramer had remained behind with 80 SS volunteers to, in his own words, assist the British with the smooth handover of responsibilities. And incredibly, the SS guards did not realize that they would be held personally responsible for the appalling human tragedy that was unfolding behind Belsen's infamous gates. Among the guards who volunteered to remain and greet the British was a group of women whose activities within the concentration camp system had grown legendary as ciphers for sadism and brutality. Women took a very active role in the Holocaust, and in many cases these generally young women matched and even surpassed their male SS colleagues' sadism and cruelty. The almost unknown role of women in the SS has received some publicity in recent years with the release of the film The Reader, based on the book of the same name by the German writer Bernhard Schlink. In contrast to the generally sympathetic portrayal of the former SS guard Hannah Schmitz in Schlink's novel, the women who worked in the concentration camps were among some of the most despicable human beings who have ever lived. Only a small percentage of concentration camp guards were women, 3,700, compared with 55,000 men. The first female guards were recruited in 1938. By 1943, the SS was facing a serious manpower shortage, and recruiting young women to become camp guards was expanded as the entire concentration camp system had grown massively. Less than a year later, Reichsminister Albert Speer ordered Germany to attain mobilization for total war. newspaper advertisements drew in many working-class and lower-middle-class girls, whose previous work experience included nurses and matrons, factory workers, hairdressers, tram conductoresses, and teachers. Many had been heavily indoctrinated through membership of the League of German Girls, a female version of the Hitler Youth. Many more women were forcibly conscripted as guards direct from the factories under Speer's orders. Women recruits could not join the SS proper, as this was an all-male preserve, but instead the women recruits joined the SS Gefolge, or retinue, a support and service organization for women only. Training lasted anywhere between 4 weeks and 6 months, normally at the women's camp at Ravensbrück near Berlin. They were taught about the corruption of the Weimar Republic, how to punish prisoners, and how to spot sabotage or work slowdowns. One recruit remembered that her squad was each ordered to beat a Jewish prisoner as part of the training. Few refused. Wearing a field grey jacket and skirt with the SS Eagle badge on the left arm, black jack boots polished, and field service cap adorned with its silver eagle and death's head insignia worn at a rakish angle, these women soon earned various sobriquets from the prisoners for their brutality. Armed with a holstered pistol and a leather whip or cane, some of them were monsters. It was also a fact that sexual relations between male and female SS guards were common in the concentration camps, often as an easy way to relieve the pressure of killing on a daily basis. They were quite simply attracted to the SS ideology as a mode of life that appealed to them and agreed with them, wrote Nazi expert Dr. Eugene Kagan in a 1945 report about female concentration camp guards for the US Justice Department. Kagan continued, "Here their inner son of a bitch could be projected to someone else and kicked with an enthusiasm that ranged all the way to sadism." Unquote. It would be a generalization to state that every female SS guard was a brutal sadist. There were one or two exceptions to this rule. Clara Kunig was a guard in mid-1944 at Ravensbrück and a subcamp called Dresden Universelle. The head wardress reported that Kunig was too polite to the prisoners, did not beat them, and generally attempted to treat them like fellow human beings. Unsurprisingly, Kunig was sacked in January 1945 and probably died during the British firebombing of Dresden shortly after. Unfortunately, girls like Kunig were absolutely the exception to the rule. One of the most notorious female SS guards was a blonde-haired young woman named Irma Greiser. She was known as the Beautiful Beast and worked at Ravensbrück, Auschwitz, and in the women's section of Belsen. At Auschwitz in 1943, Greiser had been placed in charge of 30,000 women prisoners. She often severely beat prisoners, and she also shot random prisoners with her pistol. "Daily the huts are subjected to a strict check," wrote Jewish prisoner Hannah Levy-Haas on the 6th of November 1944 in a secret diary she kept at Belsen. Inspections were conducted by Irma Greiser, quote, "a young SS girl, the grey mouse, who looks elegant and coquettish in her perfectly fitting uniform and pretty, shiny, knee-length boots. Arrogant and noisy, she storms into the hut, accompanied by a soldier and the Jewish camp leader," unquote. Greiser's demeanour deliberately oozed malice. Quote, "the grey mouse gestures exaggeratedly, provocatively throws her body around sharply, and utters theatrical, calculated, horrified cries whenever she sees badly washed dishes or a bed that has not been made carefully enough. She excels in slapping people in the face so as to produce a loud crack, quickly and suddenly, without taking her glove off. Her aim is to bully, to torment, and to humiliate." Captured at Belsen in April 1945, Greiser was condemned to death by a British military court and hanged by the famous executioner Albert Pierpoint in December 1945. She was 22 years old. Greiser's ghost is even said to haunt the site of Belsen today. Another example of a savage and repellent female SS guard was a woman named Ilse Koch, known to her victims as the Bitch of Buchenwald. She was married to the camp's commandant, SS Hauptsturmführer Karl Otto Koch. She beat and shot prisoners regularly. Prisoners' decapitated heads were publicly displayed on her orders. Koch would ride through the camp on her horse and select prisoners who displeased her for severe beatings by male SS guards. She and her husband were rumored to have embezzled millions of Reichsmarks during their tenure at Buchenwald and continued this profitable trade later when Karl Koch was made commandant of the Majdanek extermination center. In 1943, the sadistic husband and wife team were arrested by the Gestapo. As well as stealing huge sums of money, the Kochs were also suspected of having murdered prisoners who knew too much. Karl Koch was sentenced to death by an SS court and shot in Munich in April 1945, while his wife was imprisoned in Weimar until early 1945, when she was acquitted and permitted to live with her surviving family in the town of Ludwigsburg. Fortunately for her numerous victims, Ilse Koch was arrested by the US Army. She received a life sentence in 1947. However, in a very confused move, Koch was then pardoned and controversially released from prison in 1949. Such was the outcry that Koch was rearrested a short time later and tried in West Germany for her personal part played in the murders of 135 people. She received another life sentence in 1951 and died in prison after hanging herself in September 1967 at the age of 60. Ilse Koch was a sadist of the highest degree, and there were others as well. Dorothea Binz would hold hands with her SS lover at Ravensbrück concentration camp and watch women being beaten to death by the guards. Elisabeth Wolkenrat personally hanged prisoners at Belsen. Johanna Bormann, a 5-foot-tall sadist whose wolfhounds were specially trained to tear prisoners to pieces on a shouted command, and Maria Mandel, a blonde monster who enjoyed selecting children to be put to death. According to research by British writer Sarah Helm, female SS guards generally fitted into two categories. The first were the out-and-out sadists. Their stories are well known through the many post-war trials and executions, and they were women who enjoyed the pain their power could inflict on others. The second, a much larger group, were what Helm has labelled the pathetic creatures. The majority of guards who fell into this way of life almost by accident and then found they could not get out of it. Quote, they came from poor backgrounds by and large. They weren't very bright and they were desperate to get away from home to something different, writes Helm. If you were working in a munitions factory, then a job as a guard had a lot going for it. It offered better pay, nice living quarters, certainly better than they had at home, and lots of handsome SS men to go out with. Unquote. Both groups of women did have something in common, and that was the way that they very successfully dehumanized the camp inmates, reducing them to worthless, inhuman, and expendable bodies. The most common German word used was Dreck, meaning filth, muck, rubbish, and scum when discussing concentration camp inmates. Normal morality and decency fell by the wayside. The stories of some of the female SS who were alive until recently is fascinating. The most notorious was Hertha Botha, who was born on the 8th of January 1921 in Teterow, Mecklenburg. She worked as a shop assistant, a factory worker, and a nurse before being recruited into the SS auxiliaries. She had also been a proud and enthusiastic member of the League of German Girls. In September 1942, Botha had been conscripted and was sent to Ravensbrück on a 4-week training course. After completing her initial training, Botha was sent to the Stutthof subcamp near Danzig, now Gdansk in Poland, where her activities earned her the nickname the Sadist of Stutthof. The 6-foot-3-inch Botha beat prisoners with alacrity, and she was not averse to shooting people out of hand. In July 1944, Botha was transferred to Bromberg Ost sub-camp, and on the 21st of January 1945, the 24-year-old accompanied a death march from central Poland to Bergen-Belsen by way of Auschwitz. Botha and the marchers arrived at Belsen between the 20th and the 26th of February. At Belsen, Botha was put in charge of supervising a woodcutting brigade of 60 prisoners, during which time she victimized and murdered many of the prisoners in her charge. She enjoyed taking pot shots with her pistol at women prisoners who were carrying containers of food from the kitchen to their huts, and would pick out sick girls to beat with a wooden stick. One of the women guards who volunteered to remain at Belsen and meet the British, Botha was famously filmed and photographed standing under guard with a dozen other women SS. The blonde Botha was noticeable because of her height. She was the tallest woman the British took prisoner during the war. When the British liberated Belsen, they faced a massive humanitarian disaster. The death rate from typhus and starvation was unimaginably appalling. Over 18,000 had died in March, and 9,000 during the first half of April 1945. After the British were firmly in control, a further almost 14,000 died until the British were able to get the diseases and starvation under control. On top of these appalling figures were 10,000 unburied and decomposing corpses that were stacked up throughout the camp like cordwood. The British solution to dealing with the rotting bodies was to force the SS, including the female guards, to bury them in huge pits. The British refused to allow the SS any gloves or masks, and many perished of typhus in what could only be described as poetic justice. The surviving prisoners were moved to a German panzer depot, and the entire Belsen camp complex then razed to the ground by Bren gun carriers fitted with flamethrowers. The female SS guards were rounded up and held primarily at an internment camp at Recklinghausen, or at the former concentration camp at Dachau. The US Army ended up with around 1,000 SS women under guard, but most of them were released without charge, as the priority was for the hunting down and prosecution of male SS war criminals. Some of the women did see the inside of courtrooms, and they counted themselves fortunate to have been arrested by the Western Allies, for most of those SS women who fell into Soviet hands were either shot on the spot or sent to the gulags of Siberia to complete very long sentences. Hertha Botha was placed on trial for her life and eventually sentenced to only 10 years imprisonment for having used her pistol on prisoners. She was released from her sentence early in December 1951 as an act of leniency by the British government. Botha married soon afterwards and changed her name to Hertha Lange. In 1999, Botha was interviewed for the first time since her trial about her role as an SS guard. She appeared unrepentant. Quote, "Did I make a mistake? No. The mistake was that it was a concentration camp, but I had to go to it. Otherwise, I would have been put into it myself. That was my mistake." Botha died in March 2000 at the age of 79. Another former SS guard was Luisa Dantz, who was born on the 11th of December 1917 in Waldorf. She was conscripted into the SS auxiliaries on the 24th of January 1943, and she worked as a guard at the Krakow-Plaszow camps in Poland, which featured in the film Schindler's List, Majdanek, Auschwitz-Birkenau and Malkov. Dantz was so good at her job that she received a medal and was promoted to the rank of SS Oberaufseherin, or senior overseer, on her arrival at Malkov camp. After the war, Dantz tried to slip into obscurity, but she was identified by investigators and hauled before the Auschwitz trial in 1946. Sentenced to life imprisonment, Dantz was released from prison in 1956. However, in 1996, she was sent for trial again in Germany for the alleged murder of a young girl at Malkov, where it was said that Dantz had stomped the child to death with her jackboots. Her age came to her assistance, for a doctor testified that in his opinion, Dantz was too old to stand trial, and the charges against her were promptly dropped. However, Duns lived on for many years. She died in 2009, aged 91. The exposure of the servants of the Nazi extermination machine is a traumatic experience not only for those who are revealed, but also for their families and friends. Usually, families have remained in ignorance of their loved ones' past activities, and what emerges often sits uncomfortably with the image of the elderly and much-loved retired person who is accused. A very good example of this was the exposure of an 83-year-old German woman who was living in San Francisco in 2006. Elfriede Lina Rinkel was living in a tiny top-floor flat in a slightly down-at-heel neighborhood of San Francisco, a small woman who was blind in one eye from diabetes and walked with a cane due to her arthritis. Her husband Fred, who had been a German Jew, had passed away 2 years before. Rinkel was well-liked by family and friends, but she had been hiding a terrible secret for almost half a century. Her secret was exposed by the Office of Special Investigations, the department of the U.S. Ministry of Justice that had been specifically created in 1979 to root out Nazis who were living in the U.S. Rinkel was told to leave the U.S. upon the discovery of incriminating documents in German files that showed she had been a female SS guard at the notorious Ravensbrück women's camp, where around 90,000 people had perished. Rinkel had been born Elfriede Hüth in Leipzig on the 14th of July 1922. She was recruited into the SS auxiliaries direct from work in a factory and arrived at Ravensbrück as a blue-eyed, red-haired 22-year-old in June 1944. Her duties in the camp appear to have been as a dog handler, the SS using German shepherds to intimidate, control, and sometimes to kill prisoners. She remained at the camp until April 1945. Rinkel applied for a U.S. immigrant visa in Frankfurt in 1959. When told to list all of her residences since 1938, she carefully omitted Ravensbrück, and she was admitted to America in September 1959, settling in San Francisco. She married Fred Rinkel in 1962, a German Jew who had escaped the Holocaust to Shanghai in China. He knew nothing of his wife's SS past. "You don't talk about things like that, never," she said in 2006. "That is the past." After being ordered out of the United States, Rinkel managed to keep the reason why a secret until after her departure. Her sister-in-law believed the move back to Germany was for health reasons. "We did help her to close up her apartment and help her to buy her airplane ticket and go to the airport, but never a word about why she was leaving." When the family discovered Rinkel's Nazi past, there was disbelief and shock. "It knocked us off our feet. We have many Jewish friends who live in the Oakland-Berkeley area. This would be quite shocking for them as it was to us," she said. Rinkel settled in the small German town of Viersen near Dusseldorf, initially living with her sister. She said that she did not use her guard dog as a weapon against prisoners at Ravensbrück and that she was never a member of the Nazi Party. The German authorities demonstrated no interest in taking the case further because under federal law, the only crime that will be followed up regarding Nazism is murder. Dr. Ephraim Zuroff of the Simon Wiesenthal Center said that to prosecute low-ranking guards would be too time-consuming and difficult, adding that Germany is full of people like her. Elfriede Rinkel, the SS guard who married a Jew, died in a nursing home in Willich in July 2018, aged 96. Just one of hundreds of former SS concentration camp personnel who managed to remain out of the spotlight and out of the courtroom after 1945. Incredible though it may seem, one former female guard actually benefited financially from her time in the camps. Margot Pietzner served as an SS auxiliary at Ravensbrück and two subcamps that were located at Belzig and Wittenberg. Captured by the Red Army in 1945, Pietzner was placed on trial and inevitably sentenced to death, though the sentence was never carried out and was later commuted to life imprisonment. She was released in 1956 following Stalin's death and married, changing her surname to Kuntz. Shortly after the reunification of Germany in the early 1990s, Pietzner, then in her 70s, petitioned the German government as a Stalinist victim. Even more incredibly, this former SS guard at three notorious camps was awarded compensation to the tune of 64,350 Deutschmarks. Historians were quick to point out that Pietzner had been an SS concentration camp guard, and that she had lied about the severity of her imprisonment during the Soviet occupation. She had, they said, been held in an East German prison that had been under Soviet leadership, and not shipped off to a Siberian gulag. Regardless of these arguments, Pietzner kept her compensation, angering Jewish organizations and Holocaust survivors the world over, and bringing into question the German government's judgment in this case. Pietzner is still alive and lives in a small town in northern Germany. Pietzner's case was unusual in that she had actually served time in prison for her crimes. Out of an estimated 3,700 German and Austrian women who worked as SS auxiliary guards at the concentration camps, just 60 actually stood trial between 1945 and 49. Of this number, 21 were executed, including 10 who were hanged by the British. The vast majority of female SS guards simply disappeared after being released from internment camps after the war, married, changed their names, and sometimes their countries, and led quiet lives of anonymity. The focus of Nazi hunters remained almost exclusively on catching and punishing their male colleagues. But, as has been demonstrated by just the handful of examples recounted here, many of these young women committed unspeakable crimes in the camps, and it is fairly safe to assume that a few remain alive today, although it is probably too late now to bring meaningful prosecutions against these women due to lack of surviving witnesses and evidence. The fault for this must lie with the Allied war crimes investigators who failed to take prosecutions against female war criminals seriously when most of these women were prisoners of war in Allied-run camps. And perhaps the most important point that is demonstrated by the story the female SS guards is the fact that brutality, sadism, cruelty, and indifference to suffering were not the exclusive preserve of SS men, but that the young women were as equally perverted by the machinery of the Holocaust as any Franz Stangl, Josef Mengele, or Adolf Eichmann. In many ways, the behaviour of female SS guards is very difficult to quantify, for their behaviour and actions were so divergent from the way in which we view women in war.